This is Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells, and today we're speaking with Bill Wilson, the founder and president of Sustain 3, a technology firm that helps companies encourage their employees to participate in the setting of and the achievement of sustainability goals. According to Bill, sustainability projects have some of the highest returns on investments available to clients. With the rise of firms like Tesla and SolarCity, the entire world has seen that companies can do well while doing good by themselves. Join us this morning to hear about how Bill Wilson and his team at Sustain 3 are helping companies do just that. Bill, thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.
My pleasure, Doug. Thanks for having me.
So let's start first with what Sustain 3 does.
So Sustain 3 is really addressing the people challenge around sustainability. It's been our experience that companies that have decided to integrate sustainability into their company culture will do a lot around adding solar panels and instilling recycling programs and even going as far as forming green teams. But it's difficult to consistently engage employees around these initiatives and track the impacts and communicate results.
And why is it important to get the entire team, all the employees on board?
Because it's our opinion that really that's where the magic happens. And it's not enough for the C-suite leadership team to announce that the company is a sustainability-minded company. Until the rank and file are involved and engaged, nothing really happens. It's just more talk than anything. I think really you have to have everybody involved.
So I noticed on your website, Varian Medical is one of your clients.
Yes.
Now, there are some industries that being sustainable, I think, helps with your brand. And clearly
yes.
Being sustainable helps with a company like Varian. But it's not like it's an everyday consumer product. What motivates a firm like Varian to get on the sustainability bandwagon?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The folks that we are working with are actually in their facilities department. So they're motivated by operating costs. When you get folks turning off lights, conserving water, even in one case, they were actually building a new building on their campus, and they were really tight on parking. So we used our platform to get people to use alternative modes of transportation so that there was enough parking. So there could be a lot of different motivations.
And another thing on your website is oftentimes these sustainability projects have some of the highest ROIs, return on investment, that a company can make. Give us some examples of some low-cost projects that have big returns.
Well, let's look at some of the numbers. Plug loads are the loads, electrical loads, on a building that account for people, plugging in devices for workstations, for lighting, et cetera, like that, et cetera. And an easy one we do is we have a plug load challenge where we have people powering down their workstations and calculating the impacts there, because we know that between 30 and 50% of a building's electrical load is in plug loads. So if we're able to, just by changing behavior, affect a 5 or 10% change to that 30 to 50%, the numbers are big. Because, for instance, at Varian, I think their Rocky Mountain Power bill last year was north of $20 million.
So I'll give you, for instance, speaking of plug load, at the firm that I work at, this time of year, people start bringing in small space heaters.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see where that's going to move the needle. If you can convince people to wear a sweater as opposed to plugging in a space heater, that's going to have a good ROI. Outside of space heaters, what can the average employee do in their desktop area, their cubicle space, that'll move the needle?
Well, there's simple things like powering down workstations, setting power control systems on, or management controls on their computers, turning off lights, things like that. But there's also some companies are really trying to affect change. Well, with Clear the Air, it's a big deal, getting people to use alternative modes of transportation and things like that. We're able to get people off the road, but this program goes beyond just the workplace, we're also, I mean, behavior change is culture change, and you can't just do this at work. We're also providing both educational modules, but more importantly, actions for people to take at home as well. And as far as ROI goes, I mean, employee engagement in general is all about employees, which is retaining employees because turnover is expensive, as well as recruiting top talent. And it's pretty well known that millennials have they actually expect or they want to work for organizations who share their values. And being good stewards of the environment and having working for an organization that has a meaningful social purpose is important to them. So we're able to affect numbers on retention and recruitment. Now, with that said, that's in theory. We don't actually track that. That's difficult to track, as you can imagine. So I can't say, yes, if you were to incorporate Sustain 3's platform at your organization, you will see a 10% decrease in turnover. I don't know that.
But it's clearly a trend. You're absolutely right that the millennials and the generation behind them, I don't know as though we have a name for them, you might know. My kids, your kids' generation, making a difference, having a bigger purpose to their work is obviously very important to them.
That's right. I mean, most companies also are, they have philanthropy programs, corporate give back. They have community project work that they like to do, or where a group of employees will go out and maybe, you know, frame and paint a low-income house, for instance, or feed the homeless, or some kind of community social project. A lot of our clients use our platform to help with that as well.
So let's talk about your platform. So we talked about what it helps companies achieve, but what's the experience like for the average employee?
Sure. Well, the most precious commodity that we find our users have is time. So the user experience is we want our users to get in and out as fast as possible. So it's designed literally to only take 5, maybe 10 minutes a week out of people's busy lives, because we don't see behavior change, culture change being done by cramming everyone in a conference room, feeding them pizza, and expecting them to walk out having a mindset of sustainability. It's a journey. It's a nurture. So we take our time. It's not in your face. It's very practical and quick.
If you're just joining us this morning, our guest is Bill Wilson. He is the founder and president of Sustain 3. So you're talking about these 3 to 5 minute sound bites, videos. It seems like that clearly is becoming much more popular than 20, 30 minute education sessions. What do you think? Is that a good learning system, or are we shortchanging ourselves with our shorter attention span today?
Well, I think if you successfully integrate the learners able to get engaged, so they're not just being, it's not pushed, but they're actually engaged. So we do that by following each learning module with a short quiz. So there's an engagement process. They need to validate what they learned, and they can't just blanketly say, you know, click an answer that if they don't get it right, they don't get the points that come along with it. So we've gamified the system. So you're getting points by learning, but the most important aspect of our platform is in the actions. We activate and inspire our users. And what I mean by that is we don't believe that education is going to change behavior. We think action changes behavior. So after each learning module and the quiz is complete, there's a call to action. That's where you get the most points. And whenever possible, those actions are measured. For instance, powering down a workstation. We actually have...
So what is that? I have to admit, you know, just before I came to the studio, the radio show is not my full-time job. It's my way to give back to the entrepreneurial community. Before I came here to meet with you and do this interview, I left my computer. I locked it, but it's still operating. What does that cost to leave a computer operating 12, 18 hours until I come back to work tomorrow?
You know, it's not a huge number individually each day, but each workstation, when you bundle in everything, the monitor, you know, everything, it's about 250 watt. So it's about 250 watts. So if you run the calculation, if you were to turn them off every night, say around 6, turn it back on around 8, and on weekends, the impact is only about about $1.50
a week or a day?
A day. But you aggregate that with 300 employees times, you know, 5 days a week and on weekends.
If it's a dollar or more, even 50 cents, I would say it's worthwhile for a company with several hundred employees. Everybody should be powering down.
Yeah, and that's just part of it. I mean, that's one example. I mean, you can use technology to power down workstations and all that. But this is really about it's about awareness, just in a way of thinking. We compare it a lot of times to workplace safety. You know, it's you either think safe or you don't. You know, if you work for organizations where safety is a big, big deal, you probably think twice before going home and standing on a swivel chair to change out a light bulb. You may still do it, but you'd probably think twice. I mean, it's thinking. It's, you know, the first time you recycled a plastic water bottle, you're probably like, you know, it was a moment in your time like, wow, I just recycled for the first time. And then 5-10 years later, you don't even give it a second thought. In fact, you'll go out of your way to go find a place to recycle that plastic water bottle.
In fact, I think it's one of the nice things that's come on board in the last couple of years is the drinking fountains in public places have where you can refill your water bottle. So it's these little things. You mentioned safety. I used to work with DuPont, which is a very safety. I used to work at Intel. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Both companies have a culture of safety. And it's exactly like you say, it's these little things every day. It's developing this culture of safety, this culture of sustainability. Now, you're running a business, and so powering down a workstation may save a company a dollar, and various other things can give the companies a nice ROI. How does your company make money?
So my company makes money a couple different ways, where there is a implementation fee that we charge to set up a custom portal for each of our clients. So we work with them, get their design, we get their design guide, and we come up with a program name. For instance, at the University of Utah, the program name is U-Matter. Clever spin on the word matter, you know, from university. You know, there's matter in the universe, water matters, air matters, U-Matter. Salt Lake City, the corporation, is another client. They came up with a program name called Empower SLC. So it's sitting down, working with the client on what are their goals, what are they trying to achieve, is it participation, is it operating costs, is it commuting? You know, what there's a lot of things around sustainability that can help with goal setting. So that covers implementation. Then there's a per employee per month subscription fee is how we make money. So depending, and it scales depending on how many employees.
And what's kind of the range?
Anywhere between typically $5 a month per employee down to $1 a month per employee.
And is this, you mentioned the University of Utah, you mentioned Salt Lake City Corporation, we talked about Varian. Is this something that smaller companies can participate in, or does somebody need to have at least 100 employees or so?
No, we're working with an architectural firm, Architectural Nexus, who has about 130 employees, roughly 20 to 30 in Sacramento, and the rest here in Salt Lake City. And with them, we've really focused in the content that we're working with their employees is around LEED, because they're in a LEED building, and their building, the office in Sacramento, is going to be even a higher standard. It's going to be a what's called Living Building Challenge certified building, which produces more energy than it uses. So the idea is that with our platform, you can really customize any of the content. In fact, we're working with a manufacturing client that wants to integrate workplace safety into the platform. So it's whatever the leadership's goals are as far as engagement. And with Varian, for instance, they were our first client. They're big. What they wanted was really to allow a platform where they could communicate to their employees, A, but B, where their employees could communicate back to them when they saw opportunities around the plant to make a change around sustainability.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more with Bill Wilson, the founder and president of Sustain3. Welcome back to The Bottom Line on KCPW. I'm Doug Wells. Today we're speaking with Bill Wilson, the founder and president of Sustain3. So before break, we were talking about size of companies and how your platform works. Let's transition now and talk a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey. And let's stay with Sustain3 right now. As an entrepreneur, what have been some of the biggest challenges to getting Sustain3 off the ground and operational?
Well, I would say the biggest challenge is when you're bootstrapping is money to scale. So I have made a conscious choice to kind of incubate Sustain3 in Utah. So all my clients currently are here. I'm just about to start branching out to other states and other areas. So, you know, with the bootstrapping model, you know, being very conscious about, you know, a limited sales and marketing budget was, I made the conscious decision, well, let's just keep it local where, you know, I can go drive to my clients' locations and provide a superior user experience and really a lot of hand-holding until we've really figured out the best user experience that we can deliver. So I would say, you know, just the bootstrapping model and where you're wearing a lot of different hats. I've got a great team. I mean, the sustainability brings passion out in people, certain people. So that part was, I guess, the easier part. Finding passionate people in this area has not been that difficult, and I have a great team.
I was going to say, and you've done a very good job at that. I've looked at your website. You do have a strong team, including a past guest of The Bottom Line, Sam Salem.
Yeah.
Is on board. We're fans of his, and I was glad to see he's helping out at the company as well.
Yes.
And Bassam's also an angel investor, which brings me to the point of raising outside capital. You've bootstrapped this.
Right.
Have you approached outside institutional investors to see if there's an appetite to invest?
I've had a couple conversations, but I've been advised to do what I'm doing. That is, you know, get some traction financially, get some blue chip clients under our belt, show some success, and then good things will happen financially. I mean, I think I'm close. I probably need to add probably 2 to 4 more clients before we can probably have a meaningful conversation. But the answer is I've thought a lot about it. I think we're close. I think I need to keep head down and
it's good advice. It's hard to do, though, because you're writing all the checks yourself and in the bootstrap model.
It is.
Which ultimately, I think you'll look back and you'll be glad you did it. But at the time, it makes the path a little more challenging, in particular building a team. But it looks like you've crossed that bridge creatively without needing to raise a venture round, which is a compliment to you.
Thank you.
So let's talk about your path. We were talking in the green room ahead of time is how you got to where you're at. And people might be surprised you spent almost 20 years at a Fortune 500 company. You were with Intel. Talk to us about, while you're at Intel, kind of the things you liked, but maybe the things that in the back of your mind were saying, you know, I should go out and do something on my own.
Sure. Well, I had a really good run at Intel, and I enjoyed it a lot, and I think it shaped my business acumen, and probably most importantly, the importance of having processes in place was was very important. I mean, I think that brought some discipline. When I did branch out on my own, I used some of the similar methods of, you know, writing down objectives and key results every quarter and developing sales processes, et cetera. And even our platform on the back end is very process focused. So had a really good run there. I guess the other big thing was how to interact and gain trust with clients. I got a lot of experience with that, and that's come to be a big asset for growing even a small business like this.
And what's your advice for younger people coming out of college, you know, that want to do some entrepreneurial? The value of maybe working for a firm that's best in class and learning some of those processes before going out on your own.
I mean, that's how I did it. So that's my only experience. It would be difficult to come out without any experience, just with a good idea and go make it happen. It's been hard enough with, like you said, almost 20 years of experience in corporate America for me to do it. I really don't know. There's people that do it. They just must have that special something. But my advice would be to go get at least some experience and really understand, you know, really what is it, you know, what would make you as an individual better at that than maybe the firm you're working for.
Yeah, and I would echo that. There's a lot to be said for spending a couple of years understanding what best practices are.
Yes.
Now, there are special people that can go out and do it before working for a larger company. Oftentimes, those folks are partnering with somebody, be it an investor or another co-founder, that has some experience and can mentor them along the way. But understanding what best in class is, I think, is really important when you're trying to build your own thing.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So when you left Intel, I know in 2008 you founded a solar company. Is that what you did right after you left Intel?
No, I left Intel in 2000. So I built a house. I moved to Park City and played for a couple of years, which I was a reverse ski bum. But then decided to take on a project of building a home, which I'd never done. But I think that was the start of really of me understanding energy efficiency. I started, you know, thinking about how are we going to light this house? How are we going to insulate it? What kind of windows? What kind of HVAC? My first real exposure to those kind of decisions. And then I had a friend who had gotten his solar license, but didn't really know how to grow a business, just knew how to do the installation. So I teamed with him, and we took that company from, I think, $120,000 in gross revenue year one to $900,000 in year two. Then teamed up with a couple other folks who brought in the home energy efficiency side of the equation. So we're doing residential energy audits and home energy efficient work retrofits. I got a really good understanding of all the opportunity that us as individual homeowners have to make an impact, because 40% of our energy consumption in the U.S. is heating and cooling and lighting buildings. So just to continue the story, it was then that I had the epiphany around Sustain 3, actually on a mountain bike ride. My wife works in the health and wellness space, so her company engages large groups of employees around health and wellness. And the business case there is healthy employees have lower insurance premiums. And they're more engaged, they're healthier, they're missing less work, they're more productive, et cetera, et cetera. I saw the same opportunity with sustainability as was with health and wellness 10 years ago. It was this new emerging thing. People were talking about climate change, about, you know, our effects on the environment. And I noticed companies starting to write corporate social responsibility reports, and, you know, it was becoming a bigger and bigger buzz. But that's when I identified the gap. Like, how are they engaging their employees?
I can see the similarities between sustainability and a healthy lifestyle, right? Yeah. There are a bunch of small decisions that you make that maybe no one single decision moves the needle on its own, but collectively has a big impact either on sustainability or on your personal health.
Yes. I mean, the parallels are everywhere. And now there's a new, you've all heard of LEED certification.
LED.
Leadership and Energy Efficient Design. I mean, that's a big emerging market and has been for a while. And it's a way to address building efficiency. And now there's a new one called WELL. And that is addressing the human capital side of the equation. And it's pretty clear that when it comes to costs, it's more expensive. Your human capital is more expensive than your operating costs. You know, staffing people with salaries and insurance and benefits is way more expensive than your electricity and your gas bills. So the WELL side of the equation addresses how happy are people in these buildings. And so that there's a certification process where how well lit is it? How much daylighting is there? Is there fresh food available there? How are the workstations laid out? All these checkpoints dealing with the human side of it, how productive are they going to be, which is the tie-in between health and wellness and sustainability, seems to be happening with WELL. And there's a group here in Salt Lake called the Pareto Performance Group who are certifying WELL buildings as we speak, and we're working with them to use our platform for that.
You know, it's the first I've heard of WELL. Mm-hmm. But as somebody that works in an office building, I'm excited to hear that the folks are looking at that. It makes a lot of sense. Speaking of creating a healthy corporation, part of that is what the mission of the corporation is. And I know you were instrumental in Utah passing what is called a benefit corporation. Tell our audience what a benefit corporation is and why that's important to you.
Sure. Well, benefit corporations are organizations that want to integrate specific public benefits into their company purpose. So the best example that everyone's heard of is Patagonia. And it's where you're legally allowed to invest in things other than the bottom line, no pun intended on the name of the show, but there's a term in the benefit corporation world called triple bottom line: people, planet, and profit. Benefit corporations take that to heart. They want to maximize profits, but not without earmarking profits that go back to their employees, to their community, and to the environment.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing that Utah has put together. I know you had a leadership role in that. We interviewed the founder of Cotopaxi, David mm-hmm. Smith.
Yeah, no, Davis.
And I believe Cotopaxi is a benefit corporation.
Yeah.
And it's neat that we're seeing that here in Utah.
It is. I think now there's roughly 30 benefit corps in here.
You know, and it brings up a good point on entrepreneurialism. I know Davis was helpful in getting the benefit corporation passed as well. And it's one of those things that going into it, you may not have realized that you were going to get somebody of his caliber helping out. But you go in, you say this cause is something you're passionate about, you do it. And it's hard to predict the good things, the unexpected good things that are going to go your way. Unfortunately, with entrepreneurship, there's also unexpected bad things that get most depressed. But equally important, I think, is these unexpected good things. Give us a couple examples of some unexpected good things that have happened as you've built Sustain 3 and one of your earlier companies, Dwell Tech, that I want to talk about soon as well.
The unexpected good things as a result of being a B Corp or just in general?
As a result of being an entrepreneur and taking risk and putting yourself out there.
Well, I would have to go back to our team. The good things like Bassam and Brian Benham and Andrea Barnes and Lindsay Walsh and my whole team, really hearing about what we're working on and approaching me and saying I'd like to be a part of this, because there's something innate about the word sustainability and benefit corporations as, along with that, that that people want to be a part of it because we are trying to make an impact and something bigger than ourselves. So I'm a people person. To me personally, the answer to that question is the team and the passion and the willingness to bootstrap with me and take this vision to scale. Because if we do this right, we'll be able to impact a lot of people, even if it's just the little things. But collectively, it's exponential.
Yeah, you know, I've asked several entrepreneurs that question about the unexpected good things, because it's easy to kind of get worried about the unexpected bad things, because there's a bunch of bad things that can happen with entrepreneurialism. There's a lot of factors that are out of your control. But it's equally important to remind yourself that as many good things are probably going to happen as these negative surprises. And the answer is often people.
Yeah.
You know, passion has a way of attracting other passion, and people want to be involved in that.
Right.
And I was actually talking to Bassam earlier this week, letting him know you and I would be chatting on air today. And he was just saying what a fan he is of what you're doing, and what drew him to your company was just your passion for sustainability. And it's something that Bassam is very interested in as well. He also shared with me that one of your passions is just outdoor activities. You love being outdoors. You talked about coming up with an idea while mountain bike riding up in Park City. I'm curious what you're doing has a direct impact on your passions outside of work. And how does that feel to know that the company that you're creating, it's kind of this virtuous cycle of the things that are important in your life?
Yeah, there's definitely a direct tie. I do spend a lot of time outdoors. Interestingly, I try to do it actually alone as much as possible. That's where it's kind of my way of meditating, if you will. But I have a lot of outdoor pursuits. And, you know, when I'm out there and I can't see a car or a freeway or any sign of human life, I mean, for me, I don't ever want that to change. I want to preserve that. I want to do everything I can to preserve that scene. You know, that's important to me. And, you know, even up in Park City, I mean, well, especially in Park City, I see it eroding pretty rapidly. I mean, it's getting built out. Places where there was big herds of elk are now getting pushed, you know, tighter in. It's unfortunately part of the deal. But if I can help with that,
there's very few mountain bike rides I do anymore where I go the whole ride without seeing somebody else. But I'm glad that there's people in the world doing what you're doing, making sure that the environment's there. You have young kids, making sure that the opportunities that we've had to enjoy the outdoors is there for the next generation. Bill, we thank you for sharing your story with us today on The Bottom Line.
My pleasure.
Our guest this morning has been Bill Wilson, the founder and president of Sustain 3. Today's show was recorded at the KCPW studios on Library Square and produced by Ross Chambliss. You can hear our entire interview with Bill on our website, kcpw.org, or The Bottom Line Podcast. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.